Senate Bill 28, Senator Brown. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This morning I bring for your consideration Senate Bill 28. And Senate Bill 28, in effect, repeals Section 302-020. In other words, it says that anyone over the age of 21 has a choice whether or not to wear a helmet on the highways in the state of Missouri. And this has been heard before in the House and the Senate. It's been passed, and we're bringing it back this year somewhat, maybe in a cleaned-up version. But definitely we want to see this passed. We think that it's important not only to the economics of the state of Missouri, but 8 of the surrounding states of Missouri, 6 of those states have a choice whether or not you wear a helmet when you ride. And so you can see it's somewhat problematic if we have a group that wants to go on a ride, they're going around Missouri, they're trying to avoid Missouri because either it's difficult to carry a helmet with you to ride across Missouri, so it's just easier to go around Missouri. And these folks do spend a lot of tourism dollars. They invest in our state, and I think we need to consider that. As far as some of the safety issues, we have some folks that will testify on both sides of that issue. I think that if you really look at statistics, the helmet is questionable as to whether or not it does help prevent traumatic brain injuries. It's definitely questionable if it does not cause more neck and upper spinal injuries. Missouri is one of only 19 states that currently requires helmets for adult riders. So 31 states, either you ride with the freedom to choose. And I think that's important to folks that are sitting behind me this morning, important to a lot of motorcyclists in Missouri. It gives them the choice. That doesn't mean they're all going to ride without a helmet. If they're comfortable, and that's what they've always done, they're going to continue riding with a helmet. And so I would appreciate your consideration, and I'd like to entertain questions that you might have.
Questions for the sponsor. You have witnesses.
I do have.
Good morning.
How are you doing? My name is Catherine Cashel. I am the state legislative coordinator for Missouri's largest motorcycle organization.
Just hand them up here and we'll pass them out.
Thank you.
So before I begin testimony, if I may, just for clarification purposes, from here on out, I would...
Might punch the button. Be sure the green light's on. It was on. Okay.
Is this better?
That's better.
Okay, everyone can hear me now?
Yes.
For clarification purposes, from here on out, I'd like to refer to the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration as NHTSA, Freedom of Road Riders as FOR, and when speaking of... motorcycling community as a whole in our research, not only am I referring to Freedom of Road Riders, but also to the MRF. They are the Motorcycle Riders Foundation. They are a national motorcycle rights organization located out of Washington, D.C., in addition to an array of motorcycle rights organizations throughout the United States. So kind of a conglomerated research. So to begin, I'd like to thank you for this time allotted to Freedom of Road Riders and to myself to give testimony on behalf of the People's Choice in regards to Senate Bill 28. I am actually pleased to be the one to give clarification to the myth that helmets save lives. Confirming NHTSA's own statistical figures, we have comprised many files, one of which you have in your packet. We have listed all 50 states, low to high, in regards to their motorcycle-related fatality rates. Logically speaking, if that helmet is such an effective safety device, one should see a blatant divide between the free states and your helmet-mandated states. This is simply not true. What we need to be focused on are the preventive measures, such as initiating the awareness programs and education. I want to be firm on this, and believe me when I say the motorcycling community as a whole, both here locally in Missouri and nationwide, we recognize the true value behind education and initiating these awareness programs. We've actually seen some monumental movements along this way, and we've been witness to this. To announce NHTSA's most current report for the 2008-2009 time frame, motorcycle-related fatalities nationwide has not been this low since the 1950s. This is a direct quote from their papers, from their reports. Their claim to this glorious victory was that there was less miles traveled by the motorcyclist community as a whole. However, the MIC, the Motorcycle Industry Council, their most current report for that same time frame of 2008-2009, they state that motorcycle miles increased 27.6 billion miles, that is with a B, and another unique monitoring measure, tire sales, increased nationwide across the board over 10%. Education and awareness. Helmets do not save lives. I do thank you for this time. Any statistic that I have given to you during this testimony, including further research, more information, I'm respectful for your time constraints. I haven't touched on insurance, money, that type of thing. More than willing to discuss this further, but at this time, I'm done, or I can entertain.
Questions for the witness.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes,
so, so your point then is that helmets are neutral. That or is it that they cause neck injuries to a greater degree? So, would your position be that helmets actually do more harm than good?
What I'm trying to clarify here, sir, is the fallacy that helmets save lives. Mm-hmm. It is the preventive measures. Now, granted, all in all, this is just a freedom choice. When I ride to other states, quite honestly, I choose to wear my helmet. That is part of your protective gear. That is what we have right now. But I do not want the non-motorcyclist, the public, shall we say, to have that false belief in that security that the helmet is saving our lives.
So it's that in addition to other steps and measures.
Quite.
And so then, so you're, it's more of a freedom of choice issue. And so the extent that those under age 21, your opinion would be that they shouldn't have that choice too, or are you just as they're minors, so they should be.
If you want to keep this a little bit closer to home, not to correct the senator, I apologize, but out of the 8 surrounding states, 7 are actually free states. Nebraska is the only helmet required state. But just as of yesterday, I personally went to each state health website, listed all 9, again, from low to high, and regarding to their fatalities. Iowa and Illinois. Iowa was the lowest, Illinois 3rd, respectively. Those two particular states have no helmet law whatsoever.
To choose regardless of age. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? Not. Thank you very much. Others wishing to testify in favor. And I will point out that we have a number of witness forms, and we appreciate that.
My name is Greg Mullen.
Why don't you take a seat and talk to the microphone.
Freedom of Road Riders.
I know.
Yeah, most of you I've known for a long time. To answer your question, Senator, we believe that the kids under 21 need some education to make sure they have the proper choices for the gear and things. That is why that has been. And it is a compromise on age, but it's a logistic one that makes sense for the most part. If you do feel education makes the difference, I've been told by some of NHTSA and other staff that education makes no difference, then why do we require our kids to go to high school? If head injuries and deaths were their sole purpose, why aren't they in cars? There's more of them there. There's more head injuries. There's no more brain injuries. There's more deaths in cars than there are motorcycles. So I'll stick to just the freedom of choice issue, and we'll go from there.
Any questions for this witness?
I think it's extremely important. When you start really, and I've looked at a lot of statistics, a lot of issues in doing research, preparing for this, and I think the glaring important thing that we learn is, number one, education, riding defensively. And I think we've done a good job in the last few years trying to train or educate the public as to the awareness of motorcycles. You know, we are looking for the motorcycle a little better than we did. You know, all the cycles they're riding with a headlight on. So I think that both education on the rider's part and education on the traveling public's part has been a factor in reducing motorcycle deaths and injuries.
Thank you. Any other questions? Anyone else wishing to testify in favor? Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Senators, committee, my name is Terry McNutt. I've been riding motorcycles since I was about 7 or 8 years old. I started off riding dirt bikes and riding motocross and did it all on my own at first. About 5 or 6 years after I had started, I ended up taking a educational course and found out a world of information that I had never figured out on my own. So I am all for education. As far as helmets that save lives, that's a bunch of hooey. I had a brand new DOT-approved helmet that I dropped off my motorcycle in the garage, and it cracked. Now, at 70 miles an hour, if I come off of a motorcycle at 70 miles an hour with that same DOT helmet and hit a tree, I don't care what that helmet's made of, my head's going to split open. So helmets do not save lives. They inhibit you when you ride because it makes it hard for you to hear other things going on around you. I believe that, like Catherine said, with the younger generation, start them off with helmets, give them the right path. If they decide to make that their choice, that's their choice. But make sure they get educated about motorcycles and motorcycle safety.
Any questions for this witness, Senator?
Could you explain to me what the content of the course was that you took?
It was just a basic learn to ride course, and they taught you about the different components of the motorcycle, different methods to handle the motorcycle in different situations, if you went to lay it down, how to get off without it tearing you apart. They explained the functions of all the different controls and mechanisms on the motorcycle, and after going through that course, all of the functions of that bike then made more sense, and I was more inclined to use them in a safer manner.
This is a one-time course?
This was a one-time course that I took, but Freedom of Road Riders does have a basic rider education course that teaches the youngster or beginner rider to ride that bike, operate it safely on the roads, and they even have a course for advanced riders to go through in case they want to brush up on their skills, which is a marvelous idea.
And we recommend that.
And we do recommend that.
Do you have a special license to drive to ride a motorcycle? Is there a special license?
Yes, ma'am. You have to have an operator's license first, I believe, and then you go take your test for your motorcycle qualification.
Okay.
It's a written and a
driven test.
Driving.
Written and road. And how frequently do you have to renew your license, your motorcycle license?
It's just automatically renewed every time you renew your regular license.
Oh, okay. Same time frame. On the education piece, how extensive is it? Is it a requirement inside of your organization to do this? Is it required in state law to have a education course under your belt?
No, it is not required that I know of. Personally, I think it should be.
Yeah. Motorcycle Operator's Manual is pretty good, but in our area, Pulaski County has a course to take. I would recommend everyone be licensed.
Yeah, I know with Freedom of Road Riders, if I understand it right, and if I'm wrong, Catherine, correct me, with the basic rider education course that Freedom of Road Riders has, the person that's going to take the course goes out and takes their written test, comes back, goes through the course, and at the end of that course, it prepares them and helps them go ahead and obtain their license.
Now, I've got a question for the bikers in the room. If indeed this passes and becomes law, how many of you would continue to wear your helmet? Can I see a show of hands? Continue to wear it. Okay, I'm just at
I would continue. I would most likely continue to wear my helmet, but there would be times when I would not. Simply because on a back highway, like where I live, there are times in the spring and summer when you can feel the wind blow through your hair. It's just an incredible feeling of freedom.
All five of the hairs. Right?
Yeah.
You only get one bite of the apple. I'm sorry.
No, don't worry. I'll get even with her later for that one.
Any other questions? This witness, thank you very much. Anybody else wishing to testify in favor? What I'd like to do is have all those that are in favor of the bill please stand, and that gives us a feel for what. Thank you all very much, Senator. And I do appreciate this group has been very patient over the years, and I do appreciate your help in this. Yes, sir.
I'd like to testify in favor of this bill.
What's your name, sir?
Ray Heron.
Okay.
My concern on this is safety issues. While I do feel that helmets save lives, there are times when they cause significant problems for the rider, such as in the summertime when you have extreme heat. They cause buildup of heat in your head, cause dizziness, blackouts. They can cause sweat to come down into your eyes. There are times when it's safer to ride without a helmet than it is to ride with one. What I would like to see is the freedom of choice to remove that helmet under those circumstances. I don't really believe that a bill regulating helmet wear by temperature is going to work. Therefore, I think freedom of choice is our best alternative to that issue.
Any questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify in favor? Anyone else wish to testify in favor? Please come on up. If it's new information, that's great. If not, say me too.
New information. My name's Lynn Matthews. I'm from St. Louis. I'm a working professional, and 7 years ago, I decided to buy a motorcycle, something I always wanted to do. I took a motorcycle safety class, which is very important. As a brand new person who had never ridden a motorcycle, it was very educational. Teaches me where to ride and how to ride, to watch out for the cars, to stay away from the trucks, you know, the dangers that are on the road that you don't necessarily think about. I was rear-ended by a drunk driver on my motorcycle at 30 miles an hour in the rain and went through his windshield and landed on the street. I'm very nervous, excuse me.
Don't be nervous.
Due to that accident, I sustained really bad neck and shoulder injuries from the whiplash effect from hitting my tank and flying through his windshield. Since that time, wearing a helmet for me, although it may have prevented me from getting some stitches in the back of my head, has been a real hindrance. The extra weight on my head and my shoulders causes what I've waited my whole life to do to make my ride very uncomfortable. I have to admit that I don't wear a helmet. I live in the state of Missouri, and I choose not to wear a helmet because it does make my ride miserable, literally. I worked 3 jobs, you know, taking care of my kids. And like I said, I'm a sign language interpreter. I work with special children, and I've been doing that for 22 years. It was a choice to buy the motorcycle. I worked hard to do it, and one drunk driver tried to take all that away from me, which could happen to any of us. It is a safety issue, but crash prevention is where we're at. We need to be safe. We need to be smart, not only us as bikers, but the other people that are out on the road. You know, we have to learn how to keep ourselves in the lane where the people in front of us can see us in their mirrors. I always make sure I'm never in your blind spot. I don't ride next to trucks. But I'm 48 years old. I work. I pay my bills. I pay my taxes. You know, I come, I vote. And I just, more regulations, more regulations. I think that I should have that right to choose. The other part of that is I spend all my time riding in other states where there are no helmet laws. And every summer I take off because I work with school children. I'm off all summer. Take every dime that I make and I save and I spend it in other states. I go everywhere where I can ride without that helmet and spend my money in those places. I don't spend it here. And I can tell you there are lots and lots of other bikers, motorcycle enthusiasts, whatever you want to call them, that won't come to our great state. And we have a lot to offer here. And also in tourism, I think we're missing out on a lot. I think as responsible, productive members of society, we should have a right to choose.
Any questions for this witness? Seeing none, thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify in favor? Anyone wishing to testify against? And I will say, anybody that has not signed a witness form that's in favor of the of this, you're welcome to sign a form and hand it in.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Transportation Committee, begin by saying thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony. I am Dr. Gregory Fulkert. I am an emergency medicine specialist. I serve as clinical faculty for Washington University School of Medicine and also as the associate director of the emergency department at Lake St. Louis, St. Joseph's Hospital West. I'm here to raise, clearly, objection to any legislation that would allow motorcycle riders of any age to ride in the state of Missouri without a helmet. I am here as an emergency medicine specialist that has to treat the devastating consequences of that behavior. More importantly, today I'm here as a representative of the firsthand nature of those consequences. I may hear in my commentary interject some medical points of interest, but I am not here for statistical reasons. There are other people that can provide you numbers, and numbers can be manipulated to look any way we like. I'm sure that we'll hear some numbers that motorcycle helmets do save lives, unlike my constituents behind me who say that they don't. That's not what I'm here to do. Statistics do not make good policy. The governance, the representation, and the protection of your constituents, that's what makes policy. I'm here today because when I was 10 years old, I lost my father in a motorcycle collision. He was unhelmeted, he died of massive immediate brain injury, and he was 42 years old. He held a PhD from Harvard University. He left a wife at age 42 and two sons, 10 and 15, and he died an easily preventable death. It's hard when you're 35 and you've been without your father for 25 years to criticize him. But I think that he would forgive me for it if he knew that it meant that somebody else would not leave a life's legacy unfinished, two fatherless sons and a widow behind. In my time as an ER physician, I've told a lot of people, more than I can count, that their spouse or parent or loved one is dead from a motorcycle collision, and I promise you, not one of them has ever said to me, well, he died with his hair blowing in the wind and being free. He died doing what he wanted to do. Nobody usually says anything. They just cry a lot, and occasionally they say, why? And every time they do, I remember an awful night that I went to bed before my father came home, got up at 4 in the morning to find my mother crying on the couch to call me over and say, Daddy is no longer living. You cannot imagine that pain. It never goes away. No sane person would desire to author that pain for anyone else, for their loved ones, for their families, for their friends, if they ever considered they would cause it. But that's what helmetless riding can do. And unfortunately, the thing that prevents it from happening more often is the law. And it's not going to stop everyone from making bad decisions, but it's going to stop some. And one is more than enough. One stoppage is more than enough. On a further point, in some cases, death isn't the worst part, and allow me to speak as a medical professional. You get numerous broken bones, road rash, superficial injuries. These will heal. What does not is permanent traumatic brain injury, which can occur at very low-speed motorcycle crashes. And that's the longest, most devastated effect on unhelmeted riders that survive. A 20-mile-an-hour collision of your head with the curb will leave you with a permanent deficit. And what happens is you get a cascading loss. You lose cognitive function. Patients can't maintain interpersonal relationships. It destroys their families. Long-term care leads to exhaustion of financial resources, bankruptcy. Where do these people end up? They end up at the doorstep of the state, of the taxpayers, and a responsibility for us to pay for them, either indigent or under state-sponsored medical plans. Even in the setting of liability coverage and health insurance that usually gets exhausted by long-term care, when I was young, I didn't even think about this until I was thinking about these comments. I worked as a home health aide, and I worked with a gentleman who became a victim of traumatic brain injury. In a six-month span, his wife divorced him. His kids completely lost any interest in him because there was a man wandering around the house in their father's skin. Didn't know who he was. And this is one of the sequelae that we deal with unhelmeted riding. When this bill came through a couple of years ago, it was passed through both the House and the Senate. And at that time, I spoke against it. When I did so, it was at a press conference imploring Governor Nixon to actually veto the legislation, which in the end, you're well aware he did do. Throughout that time, I wrote him several letters, and I would repeat the gist of one of those to you. It is that as a governor, he had a responsibility to protect his constituents and all the people of his state, even those who do not want that protection. In this case, the maintaining of helmet legislation does a very important task. It prevents harm to those who, despite their insistence of the freedom of choice, I recognize that argument, but truly don't recognize the pain that they are going to inflict on their loved ones. It also prevents long-term injury to the state. I've heard statements made today about the economic consequences of the loss of tourism dollars. I promise you the economic consequences of the state paying for long-term care, traumatic brain injury, death and litigation are much, much more costly. In any case, the responsibility of the state comes to protect from thoughtless but not malicious action of people who, in the end, who can't support the consequences of those actions. I recognize we're under time constraint, so I will end my commentary. I don't know how old everyone in this room is. I know that I'm 35. I have one daughter that's 21 months and another on the way. And I have a wife, and I can't imagine where I would be 7 years from now if my life ended at 42 like my father's. And I would ask each of you in this room, if you were younger than 35, imagine what you would do with however few years you have left. If you were older than 42, where were you at 42? How much have you left unfinished? How many people would you have left in pain? I have a daughter who will never know her grandfather, a wife who never met my father. I watched my mother sit in an empty pew on my wedding day. And my ambitions and goals in life and successes are marked by a small gray stone in Holland, Michigan. I want someday to be interred in that same place, but I can't imagine where I'll be at 42 if that were to happen. From making a mistake that could have been so easily prevented. With that, I'll end my testimony and answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? You know. Thank you.
Thank you.
You all don't get to ask questions. I'm sorry that you go through an election process, you get to answer questions. If you don't, you don't. Anyone else wishing to testify against the bill?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mo McCullough. I'm here representing the Missouri Psychiatric Association to testify in.
That's where we're at.
Opposition.
Any questions for this witness? None, thank you. In opposition. Questions? None. Ma'am, you gotta muscle up and punch these guys out of the way. Don't let them push you out.
I was trying to be kind there.
No, that doesn't work down here.
It doesn't work down here.
I'm Leanna DePew, and I'm the director of the Highway Safety Division at the Missouri Department of Transportation. And I just want to take a few minutes to talk about some of the things that we struggle with as far as the helmet law is concerned. I have passed out to you some information about what occurs in states that do alter or repeal their helmet laws. I think you're going to find that there are three basic things that occur. Number one, the helmet use in that particular state usually decreases from almost 100% to about 50%. The second thing that occurs is that there is, in many cases and most cases, in all cases, fatality increases, but in many cases, dramatic fatality increases. And the third thing that occurs, there is an increase in the number of head injuries that goes up. And I think that we heard very strong testimony just a few moments ago about the devastation of the head injury. We call the motorcycle rider a vulnerable rider. And the reason that we do that, and a vulnerable user of our highway transportation system, the reason that we do that is because in crashes, when you compare them to passenger vehicles and other types of vehicles, they are 37 times more likely to die in a crash than an individual that's in a passenger vehicle. The helmet, it has the opportunity to give that rider, that vulnerable rider, a level of protection. And research is very clear on this, that it does prevent the probability of a fatality crash by 37%. It's very clear. As they were talking, I thought, if helmets did nothing, why does the NFL require it? Why does NASCAR require it? Why does high school football require it? Why, if a helmet has no value, I think we're missing a great point there. In the state of Missouri, we saw an increase in the number of fatal motorcycle crashes last year. 2009, we had 84. In 2010, we had 92. These are preliminary data. So we are seeing, in spite of the fact that we have this all-rider helmet law, we are seeing an increase. But I think the most important point that I can make to you this morning is Missourians want to keep the all-rider helmet law. In 2009, we did an extensive, an independent company did an extensive public opinion survey. We surveyed 2,050 Missourian residents. The 2,050 Missouri residents were a random sample. They were adult residents. And of those sampled, 44% had either been an operator or a passenger of a motorcycle. 84% of the people of Missouri support maintaining the all-rider helmet law. This is a very, very strong number. And of those individuals that have ridden a motorcycle in the last year, 3 out of 4, 75%, support the all-rider helmet law. Again, all I can tell you is that by repealing this law, we are placing the rider themselves at a much higher risk because they are vulnerable. We are going against the will of the people of Missouri by repealing this law. So I encourage you not to repeal the law. I'll take any questions that
questions
you have.
Questions for this witness? None. Thank you very much. Anyone else wishing to testify against? Just leave it on the table. We'll get it.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. Speak about an issue that's extremely passionate to me. I feel very strongly about. In 1985, I was a faithful wearer of my motorcycle helmet when I rode my Kawasaki GPZ 550 motorcycle around San Diego, California. I'll get to Missouri here in a second. One night after work, after my divorce that went very badly, I was working as a cook at TGI Fridays. A friend of mine needed a ride down to the beach to get his car, so I said I'll go with you. He said no. Can't ride with you, Mike, unless you give me your helmet. I'm very nervous, of course. I said, okay, I'll give you my helmet. I went down La Jolla Village Drive by UCSD, crashed my motorcycle over the center divider, end over end. I sustained a severe closed head injury. As opposed to my passenger, he sprained his wrist. Who had the helmet? My passenger, not me. All it took was one time. I lay comatose for 4 weeks. I was an inpatient in the hospital for 3 months. Doctors, nurses, three and four times a day, therapies, physical, occupational, speech therapy. I have a small speech impediment now, so bear with me. I sustained multiple fractures of my head, I broke everything over here except for my skull. I have metal in my jaw, metal in my eye orbit. But the telltale sign of my accident was to this day, I'm 51 years old now. I have a short-term memory impairment and a cognitive processing speed impairment. So I'm not the quickest knife in the drawer or quickest guy around in the room anymore. My doctors and plastic surgeon, maxillofacial surgeon, and so forth told me, my parents and me afterwards, that my injuries would have been exponentially less severe if I had been wearing a helmet. And these guys are trauma surgeons and doctors at Scripps Memorial in San Diego, Level 1 Trauma Center, top doctors in the field. And I have a figure for you now. Here's my punchline. 25 years ago, the cost of my care, my dad added up, kept all the bills. Let's give or take $10,000. $650,000. Who paid that? County Medical Service Program in San Diego vis-a-vis the state treasury. I had no insurance. Public money. Which brings me to Missouri, I've been here, a Missouri resident, for 21 years. I've used state vocational rehabilitation services to a large extent. They paid for all my tuition and books for my college degree at UM St. Louis. They paid for job development services, psych counseling, job follow-along services, subsidized my wages at a physician recruiting firm for a year. I now recruit doctors successfully. That's a Missouri connection. Now I'm a successful physician recruiter, taxpayer, voter. I'm married to my beautiful wife back there. I drive a car. I receive no public assistance, and so on. But had I been wearing a helmet, the medical costs would have been so much less. And I think that it's unwise to. All I ask is that the committee members and chairman don't enable mostly young people to go out there and make that choice to not wear a helmet and go out and crash. Because usually it's not just an independent solo decision. Because if they crash, they usually hurt themselves and or someone else. And that has consequences, monetarily and emotionally and family consequences and so forth. And I've turned out well, but not without God's grace and a lot of work. Even to this day, I'm working very hard at speaking and enunciating my words and so forth. And I don't have as many friends anymore since the accident. And a lot of people don't like to associate with me because I'm slow. I'm not very quick and not very good with crowds. And so I'm not saying woe is me, but please don't help motorcycle riders to put themselves in this position where something like me, something that happened to me is going to happen to them. Thank you so much for your time. I'll take any questions.
Questions? None. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Anyone else wish to testify against?
Chairman Mike Wright, AAA.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to testify against?
Chairman Jeff Howell, Missouri State Medical Association. We've testified against this bill for a number of years and would like.
Next.
Hello, Chairman and Committee. My name is Maureen Cunningham, and I'm the Executive Director of the Brain Injury Association of Missouri. We are a statewide nonprofit organization that serves individuals with brain injury, their families, professionals, as well as the community, and we focus on services of support, education, recreation, and advocacy, and we are very interested in preventing brain injuries. As you have heard, brain injury not only affects the individual injured, but it also impacts the family members and the community. Repealing the motorcycle helmet law will have a financial impact on the state of Missouri. And as we have heard, and as common sense tells us, unhelmeted riders, there is more hospitalization cost associated with not wearing the helmet. The other thing is that there is statistics that show that 39% of motorcyclists that are admitted to the hospital who have not been riding a helmet, 39% were not insured. That cost is transferred to Missouri taxpayers as well as the charity cares of the hospital. The other fact I noticed in the bill that the fiscal note from the Department of Health and Senior Services mentioned that there would not be a fiscal impact. I really question this because what's going to happen is those individuals who are uninsured will be added to the adult head injury program. And as you may remember, last year, $614,000 was cut out of the adult head injury program. Now, there are 833 days that people are waiting for services. 280 people are on a waiting list for support and rehabilitation services, and repealing the motorcycle helmet law will increase that wait time and will increase the number of individuals that that are waiting for services. The other thing is that the minor only law doesn't work, as we have heard with texting. The, you know, law enforcement cannot tell if someone's 22 or 23 in many cases, so they're not going to enforce it. Florida has a statistic that 40% of the fatality crashes for individuals under the age of 21 were not wearing their helmet. Department of Health and Senior Services statistics show that most crashes happen for individuals between the ages of 20 and 54. So there we are, where someone in the prime of their life is taken way too soon. And the freedom of choice issue, which we have heard, doesn't only affect the individual that, you know, may have a fatality or have a brain injury for the rest of their life. It affects the kids. It affects the 10-year-olds, the 13-year-olds that grow up without the parent. I was talking to somebody last night, and he mentioned that, you know, when his dad, at the age of 13, sustained a brain injury, he lost both parents because his mom became the primary caregiver for the husband, and her parental, you know, her parental time was limited on what she could help as they were growing up. It affects the entire family. So I ask you, please prevent brain injuries. Do not repeal the motorcycle helmet law. Do not add people to the waiting list for adult head injury services programs. And as you have also heard, an overwhelming percent of Missouri taxpayers support our all-rider helmet law. The other point I wanted to make is the mention about the tourist dollars so far. The statistic that I have heard most recently is that the average spent by motorcyclists coming through the state is $120 a day. That means that 344 motorcyclists would need to travel down High Street to provide the care for one unhelmeted motorcyclist for 1 year of nursing home care, which is estimated at $40,000. Thank you.
Questions for this witness? And thank you. Anyone else wish to?
I do have one more thing. I also have written testimony from the Congress on Disability Policy that also is against repealing the motorcycle helmet law.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify against? Thank you. Questions? Seeing none, thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. My name is Michael Davis, and I am the state coordinator for the Missouri Motorcycle Safety Program. I know a lot of people by name, but not by face, so I thought I should show my face, as unpleasant as that may be, for you to look at me, not to be here. I have the primary responsibility explicitly to reduce accidents and fatalities for motorcyclists in the state of Missouri. I do that in partnership with 27 different training sites that we have, including Freedom of the Road Riders. So they definitely are our partners in promoting and encouraging motorcycle safety and making good decisions. I've been a rider since I was about 5 years old, third generation, and also have owned five Ford trucks in my driving career. Just thought I'd get the ass-kissing part over with pretty early. I've also been a rider education expert for over a decade. I've been a first responder to motorcycle accidents, and I've also lost a couple of friends to motorcycling, both of which were not wearing helmets, and the head injury is what caused their thing. So this is a very personal issue for me. At the same time, I am a rider. I drive my wife crazy because every time I see a biker on the side of the road that's stranded, the rule is you stop and you help, or make sure they don't need any help before you take off. And sometimes it takes us a long time to get places, but that's what you do. It's the right thing. Ultimately, as a motorcycle safety advocate, we recognize that statistics, which I won't trot out any particular stats here, but the fact is that when given a choice, people tend to make a choice that causes fatalities to go up. And ultimately, I guess if I were looking at it kind of cross-eyed, that is job security for me, because I can tell you that if it's this legislation passes, two things will happen. More riders will be killed, and more emphasis and hopefully more resources will be put into trying to correct that issue, which falls directly on the motorcycle safety program. So I'll do it. I work 7 days a week for the cause, and I do it willingly because I love motorcycling. I love riders, and I love to help keep riders alive through education and making good choices, and we try and promote that. So,
okay,
thank you for your time.
Questions for this witness? None. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to testify against? Yes. Thank you. Questions for this witness? None. Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dale Findlay, and I'm representing the Missouri Coalition for Roadway Safety. I'm not going to either trot out any more statistics, because the one thing that I can say is that there has never been a state that has modified their motorcycle helmet law or repealed their motorcycle helmet law that didn't see an increase in fatalities and serious brain injuries. It just like night follows day. I would also just like to indicate that, you know, this is a law that we've now had for 44 years. I submit that I'm probably the only person in the room that was walking these halls when the bill was passed in 1967, which came about as the result of some deliberations by a joint interim legislative committee on traffic safety. This bill has served us well. It saved hundreds of lives, prevented thousands of head injuries, and has saved the state hundreds of millions of dollars. It would be a shame if we would drop this bill now. It's not like it's something that's new. We've had it. It's worked. It does what it's supposed to do. It causes people to wear their helmets, and helmets save lives and prevent injuries. So I would hope that we would not repeal our law.